so much. Oh, my goodness. I am so... sorry. Oh, man. Hi. Morning. Sorry, I was just thinking about... wait a minute. Sorry, I have all this. I told my wife my Christmas present to my wife this year was we were not going to file an extension on our taxes this year. I'm gonna get it done. So I've got all that, and I'm trying to get it all together and organized. Actually, my accountant is here, and I wanted to get that to him before service, and then have. I apologize. I normally turn this off. Just see. Hey, can I call you back? No, yeah. No, well, actually, I'm getting ready to preach. Yeah. No, I will. No, I promise I will. Can I call you back? All right. Bye. Love you, Mom. Bye. Okay. Sorry about that. Can we all just close our eyes for a minute and just kind of take a deep breath? Yeah. All right. That's better. Yeah. Okay. Morning. How are you? You're like, who in the world are you? I'm Steve Chapman. And I, as Steve said, I'm the family pastor here at the River Community Church. And I am here this morning and for the next four Sundays to talk to us about an aspect of life that I think most of us in this room can relate to. Let me ask you a question. In all this, can any of you relate to stress? I mean, if you know what stress is, can you raise your hand just to see if you're with me this morning? You know what stress is. Thank you. Yes, you do. You've carried around stuff, bags full of stuff. You don't know what half of it is in there. Why do you have it? Why did you bring it? Why did I bring this home? What's even in my briefcase? I don't know. Phone's ringing at crazy times. Who is that? I don't recognize that number. Stress. I got to be here. Got to be there. You know, stressed out. That's where most of us live. I've been at the River for nearly 14 years now. Came on very, very early on. I remember 10 years ago, particularly, the church was growing, which is fantastic. Growing faster than our leadership capacity, really. We were trying to figure out how to lead a growing church. My family was growing. We had two special needs children and a new baby, and actually spent a week in Children's Hospital in Knoxville with our baby and with complications. And I was doing seminary online and having to go up to Minnesota a couple times a year. And my life was about right here. No, really, probably about right here. And I never will forget one Wednesday morning, we had an elders meeting here at the church. And I was running at my crazy breakneck pace, and I was late. I zipped in there to the elders meeting, and I'm so sorry. And I was sitting there, and there was tension in the room. And I remember we tried to move on to the meeting, and we just realized we needed to talk about something. And basically, they called me out. I said, Steve, you're late again. And just, you know, kind of challenging me on my time and prioritizing my time. And I'll never forget that. Now, I've been challenged for being late most of my life, unfortunately. But I never forget that particular time because I did something that really is actually, honestly, is quite uncharacteristic of me. I exploded. I went on about a 3.5-minute rant just looking at them, and you don't know, and you're just, and boom, 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 just this, it was just coming out faster than I could even process it, certainly stop it, monitor it. It was just, and I remember, I can still see the looks on their faces. It was just like, after about 3.5 minutes, I just stopped, and I caught my breath. And these are guys that I love dearly. Guys that love me, guys that have always said, our keys are on the table. You need anything, we've got each other's backs. And I looked at them and I took a deep breath and I said, guys, I am so sorry. I am so sorry. And these men were so gracious and so patient, and they said, Steve, you seem exhausted. They said, can we just pray for you? And they came around me and they prayed over me and they prayed for me. And, you know, the meeting kind of took a different turn. We started talking about some things, and they just really loved on me and forgave my outburst. I was at a place in my life. I was at capacity. I was running on empty. I was overscheduled, overtaxed, overburdened. Stress was just a part of my life. And I could do it as long as everybody did exactly what they were supposed to and everything went exactly how it was supposed to. But there was any little glitch, and suddenly that was the straw that broke the camel's back. And it could have been anybody, really. And it just came out. 10 years later, every year here at the River, towards the end of the year, we have performance reviews. Every staff member gets a performance review by your leaders, your peers, from the top executive leadership all the way down to part-timers, interns. Everybody gets a performance review. I had my performance review this year. And I'm sitting in there with two others who are giving the review, and we're going over strengths and weaknesses, places where you're knocking it out of the park, places you need to step it up, on and on and on. And it came down to one of the things I got dinged on this year was, hey, Steve, this past year, it seems like you're really kind of cutting it close for a lot of staff meetings, some of these other meetings. It's like sometimes you're late and sometimes, you know, and of course I kind of, you know, gave some reason. Well, you remember that one time it was because, you know, the antelope were in the highway, you know, I mean, I'm making, you know, but, eventually, I was like, you know what? You guys are totally right. You are. And I you know, and help me with that, okay? And we talked about some ways and some things. 10 years separating two very, very similar discussions. One, I just explode. The other, it's like, you know what? You're right. Hey, how can you help me in this? 10 years ago, I had no... What I want to talk about, I had no margin in my life. I had no margin whatsoever. I was emotionally spent. There was nothing left. I mean, I could not one more thing. 10 years later, I think I actually have some margin in my life. I think I can actually hear some criticism, hear some challenges, and I don't just fire back. I'm not just, my fuse isn't just, you know, a candle isn't being burned at both ends to where it's like, don't say anything to me. Because I think I have margin in my life today. Let me give you a definition of margin, just so we're all on the same page and you know what I'm talking about this morning. What is margin? Here's a definition for margin. Margin is basically, and I don't take credit for this, I didn't come up with this, but margin is what I have available beyond what is necessary. What I have available beyond what is necessary. Some examples of margin. Financial margin. If I have $100 in my pocket, $100 to my name, and this week I have $80 worth of bills to pay, I have $20 of margin, a financial margin in my life, $20. If I've been allotted 30 minutes to spend, or 40 minutes to speak to you this morning, and I have a 30-minute talk plan, I've got 10 minutes of margin. 10 minutes to play around with, perhaps, you know, to exaggerate my story. That, you know, I would never do that. But, you know, I've got 10 minutes of margin. That's margin. It's what I have available beyond what is necessary. And I have known seasons in my life where I have had margin and seasons where I've had no margin. And I can tell you, and we're going to talk about this over the next weeks, I can tell you having margin is so much better, so much more peaceful, so much more relaxing, so much more enjoyable than living life with no margin. You know what life with no margin is like? It's like you ever been on the interstate and driving through the construction zones? Now, I hate traffic, and I can handle the orange and white cones. You hit one of those things, it's going to go flying. It's not a big deal, right? I mean, you know, but what I really hate is when they bring in those big concrete barriers. You know what I'm talking about? I got a picture right here. You know that scenario? It's like, I mean, we're right on the yellow lines. There is no shoulder. There's no margin. This happened this past summer. We're heading out on vacation. We're heading towards South Carolina. We went into this down in South Carolina. We hit this patch of just road construction for a long, long time. And they had these huge concrete barricades right there. There was no, and you would think we're driving through here, and as responsible adults, we're like, hey, you know what? This is kind of actually risky, and we should slow down 35, 40 miles an hour navigating through this. We're in unfamiliar territory. But I looked down at one point, and I'm doing 65, 70. We are just flying through this construction zone with these huge concrete barricades. And of course, at that point, you're in like the NASCAR, you know, position, right? I mean, it's both hands. There's no just hanging out, chilling, you know. I mean, you're right here, and every muscle is tight and gripped, and you're right here. You're focused. You're concentrating. You're checking the rear views, checking the sides. You're looking, you know, you're like, here we are. You're watching. Is it breaking? I mean, because the realization is there's maybe 4 feet separating you and the car in front of you, the car behind. I mean, if he slams on the brakes, I got nowhere to go but his trunk, right? I mean, it is just, this is where, and here you are. And then, on top of that, we're on family vacation, right? And so, you know, there's this whole world of activity behind me. I'm here, I'm focused, and it's like the DVD player. We actually had, I think, 4 DVD players going in our car. I said years ago, I'd never be that family, you know? And here we are. I got things wired all over the place. And we're arguing about, you're just too loud, turn that down. I don't want to watch it. I've already seen it. And I'm just like, you know, and then this is what I felt like right here, right? And I'm pretty sure that probably happened at some point on that trip. I need everybody just to cool it before I kill you all. Right? You know what I'm talking about. It is just... And guys, that is what life without margin feels like. And for many of you perhaps in this room, that's your daily existence. 10 years ago, that was really probably my daily existence. And it wasn't, you know, the crazy thing, I wasn't involved in bad stuff. I was raising a family. I was serving on staff at this church. I was going to seminary, Bible college, Bible school, for crying out loud. And yet I was maxed out. Irritable, hurried, frustrated, tired. That was my life. It was like 70 miles an hour down the interstate with the barricades on both sides and the kids going crazy behind me. That was my life. And I think there's probably a lot of people in this room this morning that understand that very, very well. And perhaps that is where you're at right now. I want to show you an example from the scriptures this morning in Exodus chapter 18. So if you have a Bible and you want to turn to Exodus 18, Exodus is the second book in the Bible, pretty easy to find. You find Genesis, turn to the front of the Bible, find Genesis, Exodus, next book over. There's Bibles in the chairs if you want to borrow one of those. We're going to put them on the screens just for the sake of time as well. If you want to use your smartphone or device, I'm going to read from the New Living Translation this morning. Exodus chapter 18. While you're looking for that, let me tell you kind of what's happening here. It's the story of Moses in Exodus, and God is, and we see Moses' story from his crazy birth, and he's rescued and all this stuff, and he ends up, basically God calls him to be the leader of his people, the nation of Israel. And he sends him back to Egypt to lead the people of God out of the slavery in Egypt. And God just shows up big time and does amazing things to him. I mean, he parts the Red Sea. He provides manna and quail from heaven. And he feeds them, sustains them, provides water in the desert. I mean, Moses just sees God do amazing things. And during this time, at some point, Moses sent his wife and kids back to his father-in-law to stay with them, basically while he was just going through this crazy season of leading them out through this. And so in Exodus 18, they've sort of settled down in a place here, and they're kind of going through some routines, and his father-in-law comes to visit him and brings his wife and children back to him. And Moses greets him, and Moses is kind of excited, and he tells him all the things that God has done and all the things that they've seen God do and how God is blessing and moving, and they have a big meal together. It's a great family reunion. They're just having a wonderful time. And I think Moses was actually looking forward to the next day. Because the next day, that's where we'll pick up. We're going to jump right in here in Exodus 18, verse 13. The next day, it says, Moses took his seat to hear the people's disputes against each other. They waited before him from morning till evening. Moses is basically the leader. And now they've been together for a while. They're creating this new nation, and they got to have some order because there's stuff happening. And so Moses every day gets up, sits down, and all the people come and bring their disputes to him. He's like Papa Moses. You know, he's the judge. He's the chief. He's the sheriff. He's it. And they come to Moses and they say, here's the deal. You know, he stole this. She took that. You know, he slapped me, blah, blah, blah. And he listens to all these things and he makes rulings. He says, here's what you're going to do. I don't know, and I can't prove this biblically, but I think Moses was actually feeling pretty good in that moment. Here he is. He's told his father-in-law, you know, and if you're married and you got a father-in-law, you know, sometimes that relationship is a little bit, you're kind of like, man, I just want you to know I'm not a loser, that I'm really something. And because, you know, he's probably like, you're never good enough for my daughter. You know, there's just kind of that. So I think Moses is kind of feeling pretty good. It's like, see what I'm doing? So here he is, he's seen it. But listen to what his father-in-law's reaction. Verse 14. When Moses' father-in-law saw all that Moses was doing for the people, he asked, what are you really accomplishing here? I'm sure that's not what Moses was hoping for. What do you think you're accomplishing? Really, Dad? Come on, seriously? I mean, look at this. What are you accomplishing here? Why are you trying to do all this alone while everyone stands around you from morning till evening? He goes on. Moses answers him. He says, listen, the people come to me to get a ruling from God. From God. When the dispute arises, they come to me, and I'm the one who settles the case between the quarreling parties. I am very, very powerful. In case you didn't know, I'm a big deal. I inform the people of God's decrees and give them his instructions. It's almost as if Moses said, you need to understand, this is serious stuff we're doing here, Dad, okay? I don't know what you're thinking, you know, but I know you just probably still see me as a little shepherd guy watching your sheep, but I'm a pretty big deal here. I raise this staff and things happen, okay? I mean, I think he's really probably feeling you need to be impressed with me. His father-in-law continues, verse 17. This is not good. He's hard. He's not impressed. This is not good. His father-in-law explains, verse 18, you are going to wear yourself out and the people too. This job is too heavy a burden for you to handle all by yourself. And he goes on to give Moses some advice on what he needs to do so that he doesn't burn himself out or the people. Moses is an example of experiencing some success, seeing the power of God, being in an amazing time, and yet he's not involved in bad stuff. What he's doing is a really awesome, good thing. But Moses is on the brink of serious burnout. And it's going to affect him, and it's going to affect a lot of people around him. His family, a whole nation. Bad things are about to happen. And his father-in-law sees it and understands it. He says, Moses, I don't know what you think you're accomplishing here, but it's probably not what you think is happening. And what is happening here is not good. The scenario that you set up, the pace of your life, Moses, this is not good for you. It's not going to be good for my daughter and my grandsons that I brought back to you. And it's not going to be good for this nation, Moses. This is not good. And he says, let me give you some advice. Jethro, what's his name? Why that? I have no idea, but that's his name. Moses' father-in-law is not a very well-known character. He's very much overshadowed by the figure of Moses. But he plays a very significant role in Moses' life, probably saved Moses' life in all actuality. About a year and a half ago, we were at Jerry Whitson, the Jerry Whitson campus. Every Saturday morning, we had set up. Go into school, move their stuff out, set our stuff up. A team of us went over there every Saturday morning. Started at 9 o'clock. I'd go over, do set up. Set up was usually over and done about noon. I usually stayed till 3. Because I had to tweak everything. You know, it's like, those baptism brochures probably ought to be on this side of the coffee. I mean, just that kind of stuff. The kind of stuff that Andy Turner would always tell me, Steve, nobody's going to know that. Nobody's going to see that but you. Which I would correct him and say, no. Me and the 1% of crazies like me are going to know. Hey, why is that? Doesn't look good. Every Saturday morning. One Saturday morning, I'll never forget, I got up. We did breakfast. Put my shoes on, put my jacket on. I'm grabbing something to drink. I'm getting ready to head out. My wife is there, like always, just kind of having conversations. And I made a comment. She's like, how long do you think you'll be? And I was like, I hope to get out of there by noon. I said, I'm getting tired of this. And she looked at me and said, you know you're working 7 days a week. Which is a very nice way of saying, this is crazy. You're never home. You're not investing in the kids. You're not investing in our marriage. This is her way of saying, I don't know what you think you're accomplishing here. Perhaps you think you are this such a big deal that this church, this campus cannot survive if you are not there all the time. For some reason, you think you are the only staff member that just cannot afford to take a day off. Because I wasn't. You're working 7 days a week. You know that, right? I was at the place Moses is at. I was at the place where I'd be willing to bet there's a lot of people in this room at today. And that place is this. Many of us in this room today are on the brink of burnout because you have no margin in your life. You're at the point of really messing up, breaking down, becoming sick. You're probably tired. You're frustrated, you're irritable, your life seems hurried, you're cranky. The things that you do that you feel called to do, the things that you love to do, the truth of the matter is most of the time you're frustrated about doing them. I would be on my way to church and I would be frustrated. The thing I love to be a part of and I was frustrated about it. And I'd be willing to bet there are a lot of people in this room this morning that are on the brink of burnout because you have no margin in your life. That is actually quite typical of our culture today, life with no margin, which is so crazy to think about it. Because we, living right here in the United States of America, perhaps one of the most prosperous nations on planet Earth today, we have more than our ancestors ever thought about having. Financially, materialistically, I mean, we eat what we want to eat. We do, we have entertainment. We live like ancient kings used to live. We have entertainment at our fingers. Want to watch a movie? Netflix, right? You want something to eat? You just go. Call them. Hey, we're coming. Can you have it ready? I'll be there in 20 minutes. Pull right up. They bring it out to you. I mean, we have so much. We are a nation of progress, technology. I mean, all these devices, all these tools, all these apps that are going to do what? Save me time, right? Can you imagine telling your grandparents 100 years ago, there's a device that you can do this and this and this, and explaining that to them, they would be like, my goodness. You've got to have something like that. You'd have so much time to break beans and shuck corn and sit on the porch and talk and sing and smoke a pipe, whatever it is, right? I mean, just all this time, right? Because that's what you have, right? Is it a time saver? Or is it just like kicked us into warp speed? I am saving time, which means what? I can do more. I can add more to my list. For everything I mark off my list most weeks, I add about 3 things. That's not good math. We live in one of the most prosperous nations at one of the most prosperous times. And the idea is progress is good. And it is good. I mean, I like the advances. But the idea is that if we have all these things, if we keep progressing and we keep developing more things and we do these things, it's going to usher in this utopia. We won't have to work as hard, as long. We'll have all this extra time. We'll be able to invest and enjoy life. Right? Let's take a look at the United States of America. Here's some current statistics. Find this on the internet. Stress-related ailments cost the U.S. $300 billion annually. In time lost at work, medical costs, prescriptions, $300 billion. 3 out of 4 doctor visits are for stress-related ailments. 50% of Americans reported feeling more stressed today than 5 years ago. And think of the advancements in the past 5 years. We're at warp speed with the advancements and all the things to make life simpler, easier, smoother, better. 1/3 of Americans suffer from anxiety. 1/3 of Americans, that's millions of people, suffer from anxiety. We lead the world in the percentage of its population, of its people, who suffer from anxiety. One physician said the USA now stands for the United States of Anxiety. Because that's who we are. $42 billion spent annually on anxiety disorders. 1 in 10 Americans suffers from depression. And many others are on the brink of that. There's more money spent annually on antidepressant drugs than any other. I know several counselors and therapists, and they have amazingly long waiting lists to see people. People are lined up to see the therapist and the counselors and the psychologist. 1,400 people attempt suicide every day in the United States of America. Nearly 1 million divorces annually in the United States of America. Why? Because so many of our citizens are on the brink, on the very edge of burnout. Because there's no margin in our lives. We're killing ourselves. Killing ourselves. We have no margin. We have no margin in really 4 areas that I'll focus on over the next couple of weeks. We have no margin in our schedules. We are overextended, overscheduled. We have more responsibilities than we have physical time, more commitments. We do not say no. We say yes. And we think the answer is just reorganizing, getting a better, I need to get a better calendar, a better planner. I need one that doesn't just, start at 8 and go to 8 and it goes by. I need one with 15-minute increments, right? And I need it really to not end at 8. Because let's be honest, whose work day ends today? I need it to go to 10. If it could go to 2 a.m., that'd be fantastic. Because that's about when I get in bed. 70% of Americans are sleep deprived. Our schedules, there's no margin. There's no margin in our finances. And time and finances are pretty black and white. Those are pretty easy to see where there's no margin. I don't have enough money. I'm broke. I'm in debt. I spend more than I make. I don't have enough time in my day. It's Friday and I still have about 3 days of work left to do. I mean, that's pretty easy to see. The other two, in relationships and emotions, it's a little bit harder to see and recognize when we have no margin there. Emotions, you feel it. It's the tension. It's the stress. It's the anxiety. It's the fear. It's the irritability. It's that there's just, I have no emotional energy. I can't handle any more challenges, difficulties, disappointments, frustrations, heartaches. I can't take any more. I'm right there. I mean, it's like, you know what? It's that thing you're watching. You're normally a pretty tough, you know, nut, and you're watching Doug Dynasty, and you start tearing up. You know, it's just like, I'm just right here emotionally, you know? It's just, you're right there. Relationally, it's hard to see. Because most of us think we're doing all right. And yet the reality is, you know, a lot of times we have no margin in our relationships. And I believe it's the fact that we have no margin in our relationships is why most of these marriages fall apart. They think they're okay, and then something difficult happens, and they realize we don't even like each other. And there's no way we can walk through this difficult, dark season. Locked arms, having each other's back. We have so drifted apart. Realize some of the highest divorce rates are among people that have been married over 20 years. You would think at 20 years we got it figured out. Yet the reality is most of us have spent 20 years drifting apart. 20 years just erasing any margin that we might have had starting with. And we're on the brink of breakdowns. We're on the brink of depression, anxiety. We're on the brink of burnout because we have no margin. So what has all of this that we're doing? What is all of this? What do we think we're accomplishing? What is it getting us? Let me give you four results. Four realities. Number one, we're relationally poor. We think we've got a lot of friends. We got over 1,000 friends on Facebook. I got 250 people follow me on Twitter. Man, I'm a social magnet. I mean, I've got people all over the place, right? And most of that's fake and phony. You know? I mean, just put a post out at 2 a.m. in the morning. Got a serious, serious issue at my house. I need help. Most of your Facebook friends will like that post. No. Facebook, we're a nation of progress. No, they won't like it. Now you'll get the sad, you know, the little sad emoji. Oh, I feel your pain, right? Not many will call your phone and say, what do you need? I'll be there in 5 minutes. Because most of us are relationally poor. We don't have, our marriages are not healthy. You know, I mean, we're living together, we're paying the bills, we're working at it, we're doing it, we're here and there. But really, a lot of us start entering that empty nest season, and it's no longer our main job, it's no longer raising kids. And we sit down at the breakfast table, and it's just you and me, and we're going to be like, I don't even like you. I can't stand the way you eat frosted mini wheats. It's made me sick. I mean, that's where we find ourselves, because we are relationally poor, and we don't even realize it sometimes till it's too late. The average married couple waits 6 years, 6 years before they come and get help for their marriage. A lot of damage, a lot of water under the bridge in 6 years, sometimes irreparable damage. I mean, God can do anything. I believe it, but sometimes it's a mess. We're relationally poor. We're financially broke. We spend more than we make. We charge more than we should because we can, and it's available, and we want it. I believe it was like 20, 30 years ago, there was about 12,000 items in the average supermarket. Today, there's over 30,000. This is the choices and decisions. I mean, there's so much more we can have. Why not? I mean, it used to be hard. How many of you remember when it was actually hard to get a credit card? Do you remember that? I mean, I remember in college so desperately wanting to build my credit report, and I got was rejections. I finally got Texaco to issue me a gas card with like a $200 balance. I was in biology class at Tennessee Tech, and I was like, yes, I've arrived. I've got a credit card. It's a gas card. It's limited, but I got it. Today, I mean, you get them in the mail all the time, right? Your kids get them. You know, it's like, credit? Absolutely. I mean, what are the commercials? Terrible credit score? Who cares? You know, we'll give you money, right? And we're broke. We have no financial margin. It's not good. Oh, you know, we have this image of what that financially broke person looks like, right? It's the guy sitting on the stump in the woods with, you know, the black garbage bag and that's all he's got. Like, poor guy. You know where you'll also find the financially broke? In the million-dollar homes in the nicest neighborhoods. They have multiple cars and boats that never go in the water. And they have all these things, and yet they are in debt up to the top of their head. They are one slow season in the economy, one downsizing, one health crisis away from being bankrupt. Because they have no margin, and yet they have so much. We're emotionally drained. We are just stressed, anxious, discouraged, irritable. There is nothing left in us emotionally to give. We can't handle anything today. We are so easily frustrated. The littlest thing. You know what for me? I hate drive-thrus. Okay? Can I just, I hate drive-thrus. They never move as fast as they should, right? I mean, it's like, I think in my mind, I think, you know, in those little cameras they have now, they ought to be able to see that I'm there in the line, and they ought to know how important I am, and how busy I am, and how little margin I have. And somebody in that restaurant ought to say, hey guys, Chapman's in the line, let's pick it up, people, come on. He's a busy guy, gotta serve this guy. And I just sit there, and I'm, come on, people. Remember Moses' father-in-law said, you're going to wear yourself out and the people around you. A couple of weeks ago, my son and I, Russell, we do dad-son time on Friday mornings. And I said, hey, let's run into Starbucks, buddy. We dropped the girls off. Let's run in Starbucks. And we barely got off, you know, of Interstate Drive because it's wrapped around the building, crowded. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know, this is cool. We're good. We're all right. You know, we're in a hurry. And also from the back of my car, I hear, good night, Dad. This is crazy. Let's go to that other place. So I just said, you're going to stop hanging around Steve Taboo, okay? Because that's obviously not good. But where does he learn this, right? Because we're emotionally drained. And you know where all this ultimately leads us? To the worst one of all. We're spiritually barren. We're spiritually barren. There's no fruit in our life. There's no excitement for God. There's no intimacy with God. We come to church on Sundays, and this band, my goodness, this band, and the songs we sang this morning, and the words, and we lift these things up, and there's worship, and we sit here, we're just unmoved. It doesn't do a thing to us. There's no connection with God. We're not praying. We're not spending time with God. We're not growing in our relationship. We're surviving at best. There's no spiritual fruit. There's no spiritual health. We're not leading our family spiritually. We're not influencing those around us spiritually. God is really not that real. Most days, we sometimes really, even if we were honest, we just doubt. I don't know if I even get all this. I don't know if I even buy all this stuff or not. Because we're spiritually barren. Why? Because we are so right there on the edge, on the verge of burnout. Most of us, here's the deal. In church leadership, there is a theory. There is a rule in church leadership. When your church reaches consistently 80% of your 80% capacity on a Sunday morning, the chairs are 80% full. That means empty chairs. There's room for people. When you're at 80% capacity, you need to start thinking about how can we get more chairs in here? Do we need to add another service? Do we need to knock down a wall? You need to start thinking, how can we get, if you wait to 100% capacity, guess what? You're out of chairs. There's no room for guests. There's no room for your neighbor that you invited. There's no seats. And if you wait to 110%, there's people standing around, and people come in, they're like, they're already anxious about coming, and they're like, oh my goodness, you don't even have a seat? You didn't even have enough chairs in this place? What kind of organization is this? You better start thinking at 80%. Well, guess what? In our lives, most of us live and run and exist at about 110%. Our lives are about 110% full. Listen to me, church. You have limits. You only have so much time to schedule. You only have so much emotional energy to spend. You only have so much time and so much energy to invest in relationships. You only have so much money. You have limits. There is a capacity to your life. And most of us are living, we're pushing that, we're living at 110%. And you know why? Because that's success, right? That's where the leaders of the top companies live. It's that success. It's that you're driven. You're knocking it out. The truth of the matter is people come up to you and they say, how's it going? And you know what your answer is? I am so busy. And you say that as almost as if you're looking for sympathy. But deep inside of you, there's something in you that says, and I know that probably impresses you. Because important people are busy. And I'm busy. And when's the last time you read a book on leadership? You read a self-help book that says the goal in life is really to operate about 80%. Leaving yourself about 20% margin in your relationships, on your calendar, in your finances. 20%. The truth of the matter is most of us in America, most of us in this room perhaps, are living at a pace that is both unbiblical and it's unsustainable. Really, Steve, 80% is biblical? You know what God said? He said, remember the Sabbath. Remember the Sabbath. You were to have a Sabbath. So that means 1/7 of your week is to be a Sabbath. You know what percentage that comes out to? About 86%. That's really where we need to be living. That gives you about 14 to 20% of margin in your life. Why is that important? Because margin is where the cool stuff happens. It's the unexpected. But some of us miss those things because we have no margin. There's no Sabbath in our life. You need margin. And some of you in this room this morning, you're feeling it. You're stressed. You're taxed. You're broke. You're drained, you're empty, you're dry, you're barren, and you're on the brink. If that's you this morning, listen to me. I'll end with this. I'll end with the words of someone who loves you far more than I do. Someone who cares about your welfare, cares about your relationships, cares about your emotions, cares about your finances, cares about your schedule far more than I do. It's the one who created you. It's the one who went to the cross and died for you, Jesus Christ. Listen to what he says to all of you and those like me that are so, have no margin. He says this in Matthew 11, 28 through 30. Jesus said, come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens. And I'll give you one more thing to do. He says, I'll give you rest. Rest. That thing that you think just isn't a reality in modern life. He says, I'll give you rest. Listen to verse 29. He says, take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you. Let me teach you. Because you're letting your culture that doesn't value rest, you're letting your culture that doesn't value the Sabbath, you're letting your culture that diminishes that, that kind of shuns that, that kind of looks down on an 80% life, that kind of looks down and says margin is a waste of time. If you've got margin, you're obviously wasting time. If you've got time to sit around and be still, you're wasting valuable, precious opportunities. He says, stop letting that culture teach you and let me teach you because I'm humble and gentle at heart and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy to bear and the burden I give you is light. Some of you this morning need a come to Jesus moment. You don't need to make some minor adjustments in your life because you're smart people. And if it was just minor adjustments that you needed to make, you would have probably already made those. Some of you in this room need to make serious adjustments. And my wife looked at me and said, you're working 7 days a week. You know that, right? She nailed me and she was absolutely right. I didn't need minor adjustments, minor tweaks. I needed a major adjustment. I called the guy that was coordinating our setup every week and I said, this is my last Saturday. You guys can handle this. You don't need me here. I don't need to do all this tweaking of stuff that I do. I won't be here on Saturdays. I'll be first one here on Sunday mornings, but I won't be here on Saturdays. And I told my wife, I said, next Friday, It's supposed to be my day off. Hadn't taken it, and I don't know how long. I said, I won't be working Friday. Let's go have lunch. And I'm not taking my iPad, my laptop to check emails, you know, while we wait. I'm not going to be texting. I'm not even going to answer that phone unless it's an emergency. I'm not just going to be physically present. I'm going to be emotionally present. I'm taking a day off. It had to be a major cold turkey, major adjustment. And you know what's really kind of sad? And that's been probably a couple of years now. And I've been pretty consistent in that. I've probably blown it a few weeks here and there. But you know what's really sad? Is to realize that honestly, I don't think I was any more productive when I was working 7 days a week than when I've taken my Saturdays and my day off. Moses' father-in-law said, what do you think you're accomplishing in this crazy pace? What do you think you're accomplishing in your crazy pace? Really what you're accomplishing is you're destroying not only yourself, but those around you. You need to come to Jesus. You need to be here the next 3 weeks as we unpack more of this and how to find victory in this area of margin. But the first thing you probably need to do is today at some point just get along with Jesus and say, I have to confess my sin of having no margin. I need to confess that I am living at a pace that is unbiblical and does not honor you. I think I'm honoring you and working 7 days a week. A guy was once asked, man, why don't you take a day off? And he says, the devil don't take a day off. He said, well, who are you trying to be like, the devil or God? He rested on the seventh day. If you'd like somebody to pray with you this morning, our prayer room will be open right here in the next few minutes. There'll be people in that prayer room that would love to pray with you today. First step may be to say, Lord, I just need to confess I have no margin. I'm a workaholic. I am running at 120% capacity. The first step is just to admit it. Admit it. To come to Jesus and say, help me figure out what this looks like. To get to that 80% that I need to be living at with margin in my life. The prayer room will be open. You have the blue cards in your bulletin. Fill that card out and say, I need to talk to someone today. I need to talk to someone. I got no margin in my marriage. I got no margin in my life. I need to talk to someone. I need some help. Fill the card out. Drop it in the offering basket before you leave today. If you're a reader, there's a great book. It's actually called Margin. It's written by a physician who had no margin in his life. It's a great read. Do something today. And it's probably going to need to be a major adjustment. Let me pray for you. Father, thank you for your word this morning. God, I thank you that you love us more than we can imagine. You care about us. You're concerned about where we're at. You're concerned about what's going on. Thank you, Jesus. God, I pray for those in this room this morning that are running at 110, 120%, maybe 100%. They're at maximum capacity and beyond, and their lives are very, very close to burnout and breakdown and collapse and destruction and pain and misery and disappointment. God, I pray that you speak to their hearts. I pray you get their attention today, Father, and I pray that they come to you and find that rest. Begin the journey of admitting I have no margin and I need to find out how to get it. I pray this morning you would move in that person, that man, that dad, that wife, that son, that student. Lord, I pray you would move in those lives this morning and draw them unto yourself, God. And I pray for that person in this room this morning that's not a Christian, that really knows nothing about this love and this sacrifice that we talked about and we demonstrated through the act of communion, the songs that we sing about, that knows nothing about you and this love and this relationship that is available through Christ. I pray you would speak to that heart today and draw them unto yourself, that they would make their way to the prayer room and say, I want to know this Christ you're talking and singing about. They would fill out a card and say, I want to know more about this Jesus and what it means to have a relationship with him. I pray that you would move in our hearts today to do what you've called us to do. And I trust you to do it in Jesus' name. Amen.